Welcome to this episode of the Lausanne podcast. I have two guests today, which I'll briefly introduce before we start our conversation. The first guest is İlkim Büke Okyar, who is an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science and International Relations at Yeditepe University in Istanbul. And our second guest is Konstantinos Travelos, who lectures at the Social Sciences Department at Great Basin College at Elko, Nevada. Welcome, İlkim and Konstantinos. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you, Julia. It's nice to be here. As I said earlier, this is my first time podcast. I'm really excited and I think I'm going to be really enjoying it. Well, I will probably start with the first question about, you know, why did I start working with the cartoons, political cartoons? It's always a question, you know, that's been posed to me. Well, actually, it was part of my dissertation proposal when I was in Ben Gurion doing my PhD. And it actually included a larger imagination of the Arab other within the question of actually how Turks imagined their other from, you know, transforming from an empire to a nation state. And of course, my first proposal included looking the Arab other from a more general perspective, from a more holistic view, including literature, folk culture, political cartoons, music, and so on. And I remember my professor, one of the jury members, asking me, you know, about how long actually you're aiming to work on this, you know, PhD, about like 10, 20 years. And then I realized this is like too much to cover. So I actually minimize it to the political cartoons, thinking that actually political cartoons offered kind of the flesh and blood visualization of the other. So I thought it might be kind of interesting to use as in terms of kind of understanding how the Turks actually externalized their Arab other from moving empire to the nation state. This is actually how I started working with the political cartoons.
I'm very happy to be on the podcast. I'm very excited. And I'm very happy to see İlkim and Julia and to meet them over the radio waves, as they say. My story is a bit different. My research is mostly about international conflict. So the Greek-Turkish, Greek-Ottoman diet is a classical case of a conflictual diet of rivals. With the centenary of the Greek-Turkish War of 1919-1922, I was very interested and motivated to start a project to try to get some publications out in English, since there are actually not very many publications out in English, especially for the war period. You have a lot of publications for the period after the war. You have a lot of publications about the Lausanne Conference, the Lausanne Treaty, the exchange of populations, but actually there's a paucity for the war itself. And that led to an edited volume called Salvation and Catastrophe. And after finishing that volume, I actually thought, during my research for primary sources, I saw that the Greek magazine newspaper Skrip had been digitized. And I saw some of the caricatures in that. And I was interested, you know what? What if those caricatures are existing also on the Turkish side of the conflict? And quite likely, there is actually much more digitization going on from the Turkish universities. So Karagioz and Gulerius were both digitized. And so the idea came to me to do some work with some important people in my life and bring different perspectives together and do a comparative analysis, because I saw there were publications about cartoons, especially Bulgarian cartoons in the period in English and a couple on Turkish cartoons. There were very few comparative publications. So deciding to bring together a historian's perspective, a political scientist's perspective, and a sociologist's perspective, we built a story about looking at the caricatures produced in a set of sources during the war in a comparative perspective and putting them within the whole explanatory framework of rivalry. The results were actually quite interesting because they showed, at least in one side, how the domestic issues would overwhelmed essentially the actual war.
I just started to think that the tricky thing about a podcast about caricatures is, of course, that we cannot show to our listeners what they're like. So I was thinking that maybe you could both explain what kind of publications you're looking at and what the caricatures that you focus on or analyze in your work, What do they actually look at? What do they portray?
In terms of which kind of publications? Well, I've published personally several articles and, you know, book chapters, basically, where I use political cartoons as my source of analysis, starting from the early 2010s, actually. But I should say that the lion's share of these publications goes to my book, which is coming actually this March, not that late, from Syracuse University Press. And what I do actually when working with my cartoons is basically I'm placing ethnicity at the center, especially by focusing on the, I mean, of course, the stereotype I'm focusing in the book is the Arab stereotype. And I'm trying to actually understand it from a political culture perspective, how the Ottoman intelligentsia first and later by the popularizers of the Turkish state discourse, from starting from the 16th century to the mid 20th century, the stereotypes actually transformed and established, basically. Tracing the transformation of the Arab stereotype over a long durée, actually, my book considers how these stereotypes were reproduced in the nationalist discourse of the late Ottoman and early Republican Turkey in the making of the non-national other. And of course, how these stereotypes, once again, that stick to our imagination, you know, they resurface once we encounter them in the flux of global events, such as forced migrations, as if we are actually practicing, you know, experiencing today. As you might know, there are lots of kind of revolts and the protests are taking place right now against the Syrian migrants and so on. And they are not really talked as, referred as most of the times as Syrians in the common references, but instead as the Arabs. So there is this unifying approach towards them. And that was the basic of my approach when I first began my dissertation. You know, I mean, these people are different than each other. But in Turkey, and very much similar to this Orientalist approach all over the Europe, you know, looking beyond the borders of Turkey towards the Middle East is basically you're looking to Arabistan. It's a geography with its unified group of people. You don't differentiate them by Syrians or the Saudis or the Jordanians or the Palestinians. They are all the Arabs. And how they've been depicted, it's quite similar in one simplified figure, which was blueprinted early in the 16th century in the Karagöz shadow theaters. You know, Arab stereotype, for example, is the oldest stereotype in the Karagöz shadow player. So I believe that the political cartoons in that sense are significant for their capacity to manipulate the imagination of their audience by offering the image of the other in the flesh and blood with a pre-assigned typology. And these cartoonists, of course, it's important who they are basically the foreigning intelligentsia of their time. The study, my study of the stereotypes basically focus on the belief that people are vested in these images and the real consequences of that belief. I'm trying to rely my questions on the questions like, who's saying this? What audience is the cartoonist basically is addressing to? Why it is essential for the specific cartoonist to make this point? Or what were the political circumstances at the time this text or these political cartoons were actually being depicted? And how does the cartoonist attempt to convince the reader of the validity of his or his claim? Basically, there is no she at the time. So these kind of questions that I'm trying to focus.
So I can see that the way you approach them is really to place them into a wider social and historical context.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
No, I was just going to pass the question on to Konstantinos and see how his approach compares to that.
Yeah, so I'll actually take advantage of this question and answer it in a different way by mostly focusing on presenting the sources, since I'm not actually somebody who works heavily in caricature. And so I'll just talk more about the sources and what my publication does, because it's open access, so you just go and read the article yourselves. So one thing that I understood when doing the research for this article is that we have to actually see caricature in the context of the Eastern Mediterranean in the 19th century as a new technology, okay? Of course, there was political illustrations in the Eastern Roman times, there were political illustrations in various forms during the early Ottoman Empire, but, you know, caricature as caricature in a mass publication was a new technology. It was a sign of progress, of, in quotes, westernization. We have to understand that. And it's interesting because the source point for both Ottoman caricatures and Greek caricatures is actually very common. It's an Istanbul room that started the whole process. But then the progress of the two mediums in the two countries is very different because of the different political situations. So in the Ottoman Empire, pretty much all printed press comes to a halt under Abdulhamid's absolutist rule. So between essentially 1878 and 1908, you have a dearth of sources because of censorship. So there's like this early explosion in the 1870s during the Great Eastern Crisis, and then there's this dearth. And then in 1908, with the Young Turk Revolt and the Second Constitutional Era, you have a new explosion. In Greece, you don't have that kind of censorship. There's some early censorship attempts. By the 1870s, you have a fully developed caricature mass publishing system based essentially on satirical magazines. So in the Greek case, my Greek source was the newspaper Scrip. And Scrip is interesting because Scrip actually started as a satirical magazine in the 1880s. And it's important because it was one of the first satirical companies that actually tried to use caricature to get its message through. And caricatures are important because both Greece and Turkey in this era are illiterate countries. You know, literacy is very low. It's higher in Greece. It's higher between the minority groups in the Ottoman Empire, but it's still very low across the populations. And caricatures are one of the few ways that an illiterate person could participate in a political discussion. And then Scrip, somewhere around 1890, becomes a newspaper. And what makes it special, it's the only Greek newspaper I'm aware of until the 1930s that actually publishes caricatures infrequently, but does publish caricatures. Most other caricatures in the Greek milieu in this era are published in satirical magazines. Unfortunately, a lot of those are not digitized. After the fact, after finishing the paper, I actually learned that one of the military magazines published during the war, Nikki, was partly digitized and actually had caricatures. But unfortunately, I learned that after the paper got published. And now I've learned that Embros, which was another important political magazine published during the war by the military, is also getting digitized. And that also has a lot of caricatures. So in the Greek case, I focused on the newspaper. Now, in the Turkish case, we have a very different and much very interesting situation. The constitutional revolt, the second constitutional era, we have an explosion of print. That's also because of technology becoming more available and printing becoming cheaper. We have a lot of newspapers getting published in the Ottoman Empire. These are political newspapers now. They all have a political line, whether in support of the Young Turks and the Committee of Union and Progress, whether in opposition. We have minority papers, Armenian papers, Greek papers, and so on. And we also have satirical magazines. And the most important of the satirical magazines is Karagios, based on the character from the Shadow Puppets play. And Karagios is interesting because it is a fully illustrated magazine. And it was running from 1908 to almost 1930. So it covers most of the era that we're interested in. And that's the other big source. Then we have Gulerius. And Gulerius, which means smiling man, is interesting because this is a publication that was on purpose published during the Turkish-Greek War, during the Turkish War of Liberation, as it's known in Turkey. And it was only published for that era. It was only published between 1920 and 1922. And the publishers were people who left Istanbul, Constantinople, when it was occupied by the Entente powers. It was one of the first things the Entente powers did was impose censorship. Especially prohibiting attacks on the Entente powers, prohibiting attacks on the Istanbul government, the Sultan's government. So people who were loyal to the nationalist idea, they all left, sometimes smuggled themselves out and went to Ankara. And that was published in Ankara. This was a satirical, fully illustrated magazine. It's much more illustrated than Karagios. It's color illustrated, which is very interesting. This is a fully color illustrated magazine. And this was pretty much a war propaganda tool. And also, it was also a tool for domestic political propaganda in the sense of the attempts to revolutionize the Turkish society. So those are my two sources. So essentially, we have a newspaper in Greece which has a political line that is heavily anti-Venizelist, and that will play a role a lot, and plays a role a lot on the publication of what it publishes. We have a journal, a satirical journal in Istanbul, Constantinople, which is published during the period of censorship and occupation. Interestingly enough, after 1920 and the change of government in Greece, the European powers permit the publication of anti-Greek cartoons in Karagios. So they still prohibit any publications that are critical of the Antant powers. They still prohibit any publications that are critical of the government in Istanbul, but they don't prohibit anymore any publications against the Greek army and the Greek war effort, despite technically being allies. And then you have Goulerius, which is a polemical publication produced. And it's interesting to compare what the three do differently. And they do things very differently. And it kind of defies a bit the expectations, because under rivalry framework, you know, the important role of interstate rivalry, it builds up hatred among people. Okay, that's the main result of rivalry, is that it transforms issues of conflict from, you know, material issues that can be resolved to transcendental issues that cannot be resolved very easily. It becomes an issue of not what we're fighting, nor to I hate you. And you would expect that the magazines, you know, the caricatures in all three cases during the war, and this is a war period, would focus a lot on the external enemy. That's the case to a certain degree with Goulerius. But it's not so much the case with Karagios, and it's not the case with Skrip. Instead, about half of the publication published with Skrip focus on the internal enemy, the Venizelists, so the National Greek Schism. And a lot of the Karagios papers and some of Goulerius actually focus on the internal enemies of the nationalist movement, whether that is the Sultan, whether that is traditionalist Muslims, whether that is forces essentially holding Turkey back. What both do, though, is when they present their enemies, they try to present themselves as champions of Westernization, and they try to present their enemies, whether domestic or external, as essentially people still stuck in the past, in, you know, the 18th century, as primitives, as non-Western.
Is this also similar in the caricatures that you're looking at, Ilkim?
Yes, of course. I mean, like, there are actually, I mean, my sources are, of course, cover what Konstantinos are using, definitely Goulerius and Karagios, but I also like to add Aydede, which actually transformed later on to Akbaba, as soon as, you know, starting with the 1922 to 1923, overnight actually. But so in that sense, Akbaba is also an important source for me, actually specializing. I mean, I'm looking from a very vague period, from starting from, as I said, I start with the visual rhetoric of the Arabs or the other stereotypes with the Karagios shadow theater, the traditional shadow theater, and all the way to the print capitalism, where actually the most of the sources, as Konstantinos mentioned, you know, in terms of satire magazines and so on. And there are many of them, of course, starting, you know, with the 1908, the Constitutional Revolution. Actually, it blooms itself. But when we come to the First World War, of course, the number diminishes because of the world economic conditions. You know, the paper is expensive, the ink is expensive, and so on. So during the war, actually, we see only these three, actually, satire magazines basically survive the war economy. So, yes, in concentrating on the Lausanne, or the, you know, the magazines, the political cartoon magazines that I use, or the political cartoons, yes, I add just a plus one, Akbaba, to the list that actually Konstantinos present. By the way, just a little parenthesis, Goulerius is basically the replication of Le Rire, which comes from France, which was a very popular political cartoon magazine. So they just replicated its name as Goulerius at the time. That was very common too. That was something that they used to do at the time. And I definitely agree. I mean, of course, it's like the wartime is totally a different story. In the wartime, I mean, the main role of the political cartoon is criticize. and they criticize the power center. And it's usually you criticize the state, the government. And that's why they are most of the time, you know, they are imposed to censorship, as again, as mentioned before. But when it comes to war, of course, media, the publication becomes one of the most important tools for manipulation and to actually impose national unity against the, you know, the common enemy and so on. Of course, there are cases that these political cartoons and the cartoonists, they want to hold on to their position and they want to just focus on the internal critic. Gülerius actually does that to a certain point, but he's already present his position itself against the Istanbul government next to the Ankara. It's a pro-Ankara government. So its main target is more than the French and the British and so on. It's basically Vahdettin and Damat Ferit and so on. So basically the government in Istanbul. For Akbaba, it's very much, more or less, is similar. Of course, Akbaba is basically, they just renovated themselves and they are kind of taking their position within the unity against the common enemy. So we more kind of see, we don't see in Akbaba cartoons a very aggressive, magnified depictions of the enemy. Instead, it's kind of this very difficult challenge love story between peace and Turkey and everything that's opposed to it, that's the imperial powers and, you know, Venizelos, Lord Curzon, Poincaré, you will be kind of finding them kind of. It's like a series, actually, Akbaba publishes throughout the conference. And so is it like when you read Akbaba, you're as if you're reading a pictured novel or the depicted novel of a love story between peace and Inon, actually. So Turkey, let's say. For Karagöz, it's different. Karagöz is more aggressive among the three, I would say. It directly attacks the foreign enemy. It directly attacks the imperial powers. It positioned itself, of course, close to, next to Ankara government. But we see a more, like in Karagöz depictions, you will be, for example, they will take whatever the discussion of that week is. For example, it's the Musul case. And the whole, it's because Karagöz used to be published twice a week sometimes, and it depends. So it mostly functioned almost like a newspaper in that sense. So we will be seeing actually how Karagöz actually brings the scenes, fictionalized scenes most of the time, with lots of symbolic representation, and kind of try to create awareness among its audience, the Turkish audience, the Turkish people. Okay, concerning whatever has been discussed. And of course, the foreigner, the Western powers are always the bad guys. Okay, you will be seeing Karagöz and Hacivat, the two protagonists actually from the Shadow Theater, constantly narrating the situation to its audience, while actually in the front, you will be seeing the conference room, a table which is kind of seated by various representatives of the committees in Lausanne, and in the middle, in the shape of a turkey or a food or a nice thing, let's say the Musul case, and people trying to share that in, among them, for example. This kind of representations that they will be using. And of course, this is very common for a war propaganda. I mean, political cartoons were great tools for that, you know. I mean, they are great means to stick your enemy if you want to do something. And the bad thing is that these images remain in the public for years to come.
This is, yeah. I think together, you've cast a really great and very interesting net of the different publications and all the different conflicts that are shown in the magazines. So to conclude, I'm just going to ask you both how the Lausanne Conference specifically features in the publications that you've discussed, and what the main argument about Lausanne would be in the publications. I mean, maybe you can choose one or two specific ones.
So I'll start first, since mine is briefer. Since I didn't actually look at the Lausanne Conference period, and we stopped looking at the publications in 1922 with the end of the war. On the Greek side, it's very simple. You can't find any caricatures. And the reason is simple. Scrip was closed down between 1922, 1924. Greece is in total political shambles. There is a coup d'etat or military mutiny. Officers that used to be associated with Venizelos are in power. You actually see how Scrip tries to survive by actually publishing pro-mutiny editorials as the mutiny is building up, saying the revolution is necessary, but still it maintains its deep hatred of Venizelos, and its past transgressions against the Venizelos officers are not forgiven. So it's actually closed down from 1922 to roughly 1926. So unfortunately, there are no cartoons, or I did not have any access to any publications with cartoons in Greece during this period. And there's highly likely, I mean, there were probably satirical magazines that made cartoons, but these are not digitized, so we don't have access. And I also think because of the collapse of the economy, you probably won't see many cartoons published, period, in Greece. Simply because it was expensive, the economy had collapsed, there was no money. You actually see that in Scrip also, because if you look at the number of cartoons published in Scrip before 1921, and then after 1921, the numbers are just hugely different, and it's because it just gets too expensive. Now, when it comes to Turkish cartoons, I can speak about what were the indicators towards the end of the war, and Ilkim has worked more on this, so she can say more. But one of the basic things you see the piece being presented is by soup. Okay, there's this very big theme of soup making. This is both in Karagios and both in Gulerius, but it's very much very big in Karagios. The idea that Ataturk and Inonu are preparing the soup. I remember one of the cartoons was attacking the Sèvres Treaty by saying, you know, this soup was prepared and put in the Sèvres porcelain, but nobody wants to drink from it. And Karagios going, but don't worry, our leader is making a new soup in Ankara and everybody will want to drink from that. So there's, you know, there is this imagery of the peace treaty as being this soup prepared by Ataturk, by Inonu, and so on, and it actually is also soup maker was a vulgar term used against King Constantine of the Greeks. So he was called the soup maker, and there is this characteristic cartoon for the Battle of Second Inonu at Gulerius, where Inonu is making soup on the back of General Papoulas, the commander in chief of Greece. So that was the interesting, I think, imagery that was coming out of the war. And Ilkim would say it would continue during the negotiations, this idea of making a peace soup. The other interesting thing I found was generally the imagery of Greek politicians is very negative. You know, it's not that the caricatures, by the way, are very vulgar. And yes, Karagios tends to be more vulgar in its depictions. Gulerius is actually very interesting, first of all, because it has this huge cast of characters it presents. And that the caricatures are more like classical caricatures. They're not tried necessarily, except from a couple of cases, to totally monstrosize the enemy or the topic, but they do caricature. And what you find interesting is once the mutiny starts in Greece, and that is covered a bit in the Turkish publications, they present Venizelos as a fireman coming to take out the fire. So there's this positive presentation of Venizelos, which is very different than his presentation in the early years of the war in the publications, where he's presented as an evil devil, you know, something like that, which is also common with the Greek publications because Scrip hated Venizelos. But then you see this presentation of Venizelos as a fireman. But then again, when you see some of the cartoons about Lausanne, he's presented as a monkey, just trying to be grasping and get something out of the piece. So there's this interesting duality over there. But I think Ilkim might have more to say because she actually looked at the cartoons during the period of the negotiations. I stopped when the war ended.
Yeah, I did. And I find it very interesting. But actually, you're right. The one thing I observed is, you know, usually, in the cartoons, in three of the, Karagios, Akbaba, and Gulerius, you don't see Greece or Venizelos, let's say, that embodies Greece, is the main enemy. He's never, you know, Venizelos never represented as the main enemy. He's actually most of the time very much presented as the puppet, as Zahedin and so on. So like, and the main targeted enemies was always the victors of the Great War, France, you know, Italy, and of course, Britain. In most of the cases, actually, Venezuela was kind of depicted, I don't know how to put it, is it like in a nice way, like they, at the end of the war, when actually everybody celebrates, you know, the peace. In the magazines, you will meet, for example, Akbaba represent this whole thing as a wedding, you know, and Venizelos will be following peace and Inönü, you know, peace is like in the shape of a bride and Inönü next to it. And Venizelos will be right behind them playing the tambourine as if like very happy with the situation, as if like, you know, you don't see him complaining from the outcome of the conference. So in that sense, it's kind of interesting to me. But I don't know what else I can say, because I thought what I actually observed in the publications corner concerning the Lausanne, the soup is one, as Konstantinos mentioned, is one of the images. And he's so much right. I as soon as he mentioned it, I just, all those cartoons came in front of my eyes. And yes, Putin, symbol that strikes me always is this, like that love story, you know, it's sort of like that, this very difficult, challenging love story between the peace and Turkey. Of course, it's important because Lausanne is basically where Turkish state is made, you know, where their borders been legitimized and recognized and so on. So it's quite understandable in that sense. But yeah, that's all I want to say, basically. Actually, there are a lot I want to say, but for now, I think that's, I'll be stopping here.
Thank you. This has been great. And it's really lovely to see in the comparison that even though, as you both mentioned before, that caricature is always seen to be sort of very aggressive and focusing on the other, that in the end, talking about Lausanne, we ended up saying that it's sort of quite kind-hearted and lovely in a way as well, which is a very interesting conclusion to the talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia. It was great seeing you.
Thank you, Julia.